The last 20 years have seen an explosion of cool tech, shiny digital apps, and progressive business models, but not all have migrated successfully to traditional banking. Have we lingered too long in the glittering halls of cutting edge? Have we forgotten the real goals of reliable, trustworthy, and functional banking? Is it time to find the real magic in building a bank that works? Welcome to Functional Banking Magic, a podcast that aims to tell the stories of the magic in a bank that works. Hello, welcome everyone, and welcome to Functional Banking Magic from The Banker. As always, I'm your host, Liz Lumley, and today we're looking at The Good Bank. And I am sitting down with Yorbel Orenbaev. I do apologize if I've butchered that. He is the former chairman of the board of directors of Heartland Securities and Usyn Bank. Currently, he's an independent financial services consultant, and he's also the former deputy prime minister of Kazakhstan. Yorbel, welcome.
Thank you, Liz, for this introduction. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So one of the reasons why you're being on the podcast with us today is we're looking at bringing a bank back from insolvency. So in 2019, Usyn Bank, then called Tenisa Bank, was pushed to insolvency, all due to precarious banking practices and a lack of regulatory supervision. But through the adoption of the ecosystem business model, the bank achieved $1.2 billion in profits, acquired 1 million new customers, and paved the way for an IPO in London. And this was all done under the chairmanship of yourself. So this is why we're going to talk through the story of this bank. One of the reasons I've called this podcast The Good Bank is, I think I saw an interview with you where you talked a bit about it. So I'd love to get your definition of what you consider a good bank.
A good bank is generally a bank which has good assets. There are underlying assets, mostly 90% loans. And then in the distressed bank or an insolvent bank, usually these assets are not performing. So when you deal with such a situation when a bank is insolvent, faces challenges, usually that's because assets are not performing. And you, I found that very useful, you separate high quality assets away from distressed assets. So, and you set up two different teams. One team is focused on the bad bank, trying to recover distressed assets. And then you set up another team who continue working and then doing the regular banking business, making loans, and make sure that loans are performing. Mm-hmm. And then the default rate is accepted. Usually it's like 1%, 2%, and they're not dominating and not undermining the solvency of the bank.
Interesting. But I mean, maybe we can go back and get a bit more detail, because I'd love to hear the story of Usyn Bank. I mean, if some of the what were some of the precarious banking practices that led to the initial insolvency, and why do you think there was a lack of regulatory supervision?
This is a great question. But let me explain you some general landscape. Mm-hmm. In Kazakhstan, why we decided to buy out this failed Cessna Bank. I've been developing an investment arm of the university in Kazakhstan. It is an international university modeled after US. So we had a big endowment fund, and then part of our investment policy, we could invest in equities. And then we bought some former RBS branch in Kazakhstan. It was a small bank. The intention was to develop it as a kind of the credit union because the rest of the banks around us were failing and it was more or less endless financial crisis. So university managed a lot of their assets and endowment funds in particular. So we thought, okay, board of trustees thought, okay, let's create our own endowment fund, our own credit type of the bank, and then we will safeguard the assets of the university and endowment fund. But then what happened National Bank, the regulator at that time, he kind of despotted our very conservative and prudent policies. And then they approached us and said, you see, there is a series of the failing banks. And then one of them is the Cessna Bank. In 2018, it was the second biggest bank in Kazakhstan, mostly corporate bank. They tried to bail out this bank during the 2018. It did not work. So they approached us and said, what do you think if you can handle the situation over there? We looked to the bank. The situation was terrible over there. 90% of the assets, underlying assets, did not perform. So the bank was, in a nutshell, a bankrupt. So we discussed with the government, with the National Bank, and we approached this issue from an interesting dimension. So I suggested, if we cannot buy a bank with the losses, with the negative capital. So you have to clean up the balance sheet and bring it listed to the zero. So the value of the bank becomes zero, but not minus half of the billion US dollars, meaning that all deposits are gone or capital of the bank is gone. And at that time, I understood that the government could not afford any bankruptcy, especially it was too big to fail bank. So we agreed. And they said, after you clean up this mess, bring the value of the bank to the zero, we with a group inject necessary. At that time, it was about 200 million US dollars as a necessary capital and make sure that this bank will proceed with the very prudent policies and conservative one and story is not repeated. So we agreed in 2019, we bought this bank after government and National Bank cleaned up the balance. We tentatively had access through our auditors, National Bank's auditors, KPMG, Ernst & Young, Big Four worked on the auditing this bank. It was kind of the looking into the abyss, you know. So 90% of the assets not performing, the good personnel left the bank, clients, it was a run, depositors was a run, the nightmare. I mean, it was for a banker, it was a very, very challenging situation. So we decided, okay, how to deal with this mess? So one of the approach we already discussed, I suggested, okay, let's split the bank into the good one and a bad one. And again, meaning was that we transferred all bad assets, not performing assets, but there are different quality of not performing into one bank. And then set up a particular team who was focused on the recovery, how to recover as much as possible. And then we produced some KPIs for them in this regard. So how to recover, not make additional loans, but how to recover as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And the second team was set up to just build a normal bank, produce a strategy, viable strategy, and that's how we actually end up with the ecosystem business model after analyzing different trends in the market, different examples, experiences. That time in 2019, in the March of this year, actually two clients only were transferred to the good bank. Mm-hmm. They almost started from the scratch because the rest assets were not performing, and the good bank's team rejected to take them. They said it is poisonous, toxic. We cannot work. I mean, we will be focused on the dealing with these clients in the future. So not and the high quality clients. So what happened next? The team of the bad bank successfully during the 2 years recovered
That was, sorry to interrupt, that was one of my questions. I was thinking, what happened to the bad bank? Like, you have the good bank and the bad bank.
It was a very successful story. We employed a couple of the corporate strategies. One of them was, for example, non-restructuring, because non-restructuring of the existing loans. because it used to be widespread practice in Kazakhstan when a client approach a bank and says, okay, can you make my loan 2 years longer? Can you decrease the interest rate? Can you make payments instead of the monthly to the quarterly or by the end of the year? So and then, you know, it kind of the moral hazard issue in addition to the underlying corruption incentives. And then after you restructure, you never receive this money back usually. So we said, first of the things we did, we said no restructuring. You said either pay or we go to the court. If we find some criminal activities, we file claims in the GAP with the prosecutor general, or we just go to the court and collect whatever is possible to collect. But no restructuring, no way. And it did work. It did work. Most of the clients of the bad bank tried to negotiate with us. We said no. And then surprisingly, they found a lot of the money to repay a significant chunk of this non-performing loans. Mm. What happened to the good bank? They worked with the KPMG and other consultants, and it was a great team from the London and Moscow office of KPMG at that time, and they showed us the future of the banking, especially trends in this field. It was a great example. In the UK, for example, Revolut Bank was a great example. At the time they were implementing this digital services products. In Russia, it was Tinkoff Bank. So we studied, we invested to understand these trends. What does it mean to be an ecosystem? What is an artificial intelligence? What is underlying technologies behind this bank? What new generation of the clients want in the banking in the future? So we invested, and then after 1.5 years, they produced a great strategy with completely different set of KPIs, different from the bad bank. For example, with regard to the marketplace, how many merchants you will onboard to your marketplace, how many active users you have with your mobile app, this type of the KPIs. Mm. So it was a great success, both in terms of the recovery and in terms of the future of the banking and the new strategy.
Yeah, I mean, sort of in dealing with the new sort of digital banking structure on the good bank, were you starting from scratch, or were you building on something that existed already?
We started from the scratch. Mm-hmm. Because the problem, and actually I would prefer to start from the scratch to implement this type of the product.
I think most people will. That's one of the big problems in banking, dealing with the
because length. The heritage you have with your IT system, with your IT infrastructure, that becomes a high burden. Mm. To transform something which is not working into something modern, very difficult. This is a double challenge. But our advantage was in a way that everything failed in this bank. So
you have to start from scratch.
Yeah. We understood that there is no other options, so we just started from the scratch and then put aside whatever they had in terms of their IT, digital systems. But the advantage was that we understood what did not work. Mm. The previous approach of the Cessna Bank was like we buy out some technology from Kyiv, from Ukraine IT company, or from some Germany, and then they... Actually, it didn't work. Mm. So you need first strategy, and then you digitalize the strategy. So IT is just a tool. It's not a silver bullet or a solution by itself.
Yeah. What were some of the technology partners that you worked with, or did you?
Actually, we developed everything in-house. Mm-hmm. Because at least that time, and I believe right now, there are no... solutions, IT solutions in the market. Mm. And then it's also relevant to the regulation, how the regulators require some different type of the reporting, So you build your IT around this reporting system. And so this is in a way unique. We try to approach different sellers. IT solutions. We talk to some companies in the Europe, Switzerland, Germany, Russia, US. But then we found out that there is no ready solutions, and we just set up our own IT team and worked our own solutions. Mm.
So I've seen you quoted in some press articles as saying that people no longer want brick and mortar banks, and that this gets written about a lot, but I mean, how do you serve? I mean, you mentioned before it was a bank that was, you know, too big to fail, which has been around for a while. How do you serve those who are customers of the bank who still want the bricks and mortar?
My takeaway is that you still have to provide services through branches. Mm-hmm. But a solution is, so this is always kind of a balancing act. This is a trade-off. You have to somehow optimize your branch system, but you still leave some kind of the hubs in terms of the branches. Mm-hmm. So instead of having, for example, in our case, we had around, 500 branches across the country. So we optimize this by 150 or something like that. So you have to optimize, because there's still all the generation, there are still conservative customers which would like to use a physical branch to go and interact, especially with the old people. Most of them just come to communicate, to socialize. So they like to meet some people, to talk. They perfectly okay with the digital transactions, but they would like to see somebody in person. To talk to them, you know, to chat about what is happening in the community. In a way, we addressed, our example was that the first year we implemented our digital initiative for the whole year of the 2020, I believe, the nature of our branch system changed into the learning centers. So most of the clients used our branches to come and learn about our app, how to use it, what does it mean? Because it's sometimes quite complicated, how to make loans to the app. But then we found out that by the end of the year, the number of the people coming significantly decreased, coming into the branches significantly decreased. So we started optimizing, because this is a lot of the cost. So my point here is that you still, any bank, any digital bank, understanding that a new generation prefer more app, more online, more ubiquitous type of the IT solutions, and you still need some branches, but not in the size comparable to the past, and the nature of these branches will be different. So probably they will be like more community centers, more like service centers, when people come not only to transact, but learn about future products of the bank, set up some clubs to talk out some particular issues. Our branches used a lot of the children. So parents brought children because we had some very particular products for the children. So we taught children how to use these products and make aware that parents can control, especially with the gaming. Mm. You know, a lot of the children play games.
We produce. Yes. I live in that world myself.
And then these children will become your future customers. Mm. So this is important to build this loyalty from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I mean, one of my penultimate questions is that whenever a bank goes through sort of a digital transformation, they talk about being customer first. And I'd love to get people's different views on that. What does being customer first actually mean in practice?
Needs and wants of your customers. You focus on them. Then you perfect your business processes. To make satisfaction of these wants and needs perfect. And I will just give you one example. We started making loans online And then initially it took like almost 1 hour to onboard, make a loan, go through the scoring system, identify the risk profile of a potential borrower. But our target was to make a loan within 1-3 minutes and make it as perfect as possible. So you, in a way, as a client, enjoy this process. So nothing irritates you over this process. Or another example, and we actually successfully ended up making loans within 1-2 minutes online. So we perfected our back, middle, front office, and it was seamless process in terms of the making. And then everybody enjoyed it and liked it and not irritated. Another great example could be, for example, you lost your credit card. So, and then you're calling your bank. What will be the first reaction actually? What do you think, Liz? I mean, how the bank can help somebody?
They'd cancel the card.
or maybe card is stolen in some mall lost or actually, we found out that it's mostly the first thing to deal in such a situation to help psychologically. So you usually an operator should explain, calm down a client, say everything is good. I mean, world is going to continue. You're going to continue. Your money is safe. Don't stress up, stress out. So it's just simple words helps a lot because a person distressed. This is not very pleasant experience. So, putting such client first experience helps a lot, and then you can resolve. I mean, you can okay. Can you tell the number of your so this kind of the two examples what for us meant building business
having
processes.
Having that human connection still involved in the customer experience.
Because in the essence of any business process is the wants and needs of the people. So without understanding what people want, if not targeting enjoyment or seamless process, I mean, you won't be able to build some kind of the client-first products and services.
So currently you're working as an independent financial services consultant. I think you're based in the U.S., correct?
Yes.
What's next for you? What are you working on now?
I'm in a way on the sabbatical. I'm pursuing my master's degree with the Johns Hopkins University on something which I could not afford before, but now I can spend my time learning things I like. I hope to finish within 2 years. But at the same time, I'm also developing my own consultancy company, Yukon Invest. And this company is focusing on providing advices to the financial organization in terms how they can modernize and then transform towards digital ecosystems. In the U.S., for example, there are more than 4,500 community and regional banks. This is a staggering number. So these banks, in a way, are struggling to transform themselves and then accommodate the current trends in the market. So I'm planning that my company can help at least some part of these banks to through consultancy to transform into a digital ecosystem type of the banks, which is a demand of the future.
Wonderful. Yerbo, thank you so much for chatting with me on Functional Banking Magic. We greatly appreciate it.
Liz, thank you very much for having me and your interest in the subject. I really appreciate this interview and your time.
Thank you for listening to Functional Banking Magic, which runs monthly out of The Banker. You can listen to this podcast on thebanker.com, Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcast fix. If you would like to be a guest on Functional Banking Magic, you can contact Liz Lumley at elizabeth.lumley@ft.com.